This is Taylor Talk, the number one Taylor Swift podcast, brought to you by TaylorTalk.org. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Taylor Talk, episode 74. My name's Adam.
I'm Diane.
And I'm Steve.
And today is what? August 4th, 2013. We've got a lot planned for you guys, including a song analysis. We're bringing it back.
It's been a while. I'm so excited. I've missed these so much.
Aw. Well, you have a lot to live up to now that you made that comment. Better be a good analysis.
I hope so. I hope I don't disappoint you guys.
Cool. So, you know, I was doing some reading earlier. And yes, I know how to read before any of you make that joke.
I wasn't going to make that comment, but you
did it
yourself.
Now that you mention it.
Ouch. But anyway, I learned something interesting about the Red album, and I wanted to see if I could stump you guys with it.
Whoa, this is a little too early in the episode for that kind of stuff, Adam. Don't we hold off for the stump the host till the end?
Usually, but I'm doing it now because this is my own stump the host. This wasn't submitted. It's just something I found, like, literally, what, about 10, 15 minutes before recording?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So, it turns out Gary Lightbody provided his vocals not only on one track on the Red album, but on two. Does anybody know which other song Gary Lightbody provided his vocals for on the Red album?
Well, I know he did for the last time, but obviously that's not the one you're asking. Yeah, duh.
That's not the one I'm asking about.
Good answer, Diane. Good answer.
Yeah, well, you know. I'm trying to think of songs on the Red album that have male voices in them, like even like a subtle background, but because we've been put on the spot, like my mind is blank, so I can't think of anything. I don't know, Steve, do you have any ideas?
I would have to say it would probably be a non-Nathan Chapman related song because a lot of times he puts his male vocals on some of Taylor's tracks, so it would probably not be one of those songs.
He does provide a lot of vocals, you're right, Steve, but I don't know if he was involved in this song. I didn't look into who else was involved. I can find that out really fast, though, for you.
Well, no, I was saying the fact that it's probably a song that Nathan Chapman was not involved in. That's why Gary Lightbody's vocals are in there. But I have no idea.
Just tell us, Adam. I think we gave up.
You give up? The correct answer is Everything Has Changed.
What?
What?
Everything
so does that mean
changed.
That Ed Sheeran wasn't good enough? What's the deal?
Yeah, exactly. Ed Sheeran wasn't good enough. That must have been it, Diane.
Wow.
Hang on. I'm looking in the book right now. So backup vocals were provided by Gary Lightbody and Butch Walker.
Well, Butch Walker was the producer of that song. So that kind of makes sense. So I was at least to the point of being correct that it wasn't going to be one that Nathan Chapman was on.
That was correct, Steve. I was checking on that because that I didn't know.
Huh.
But yeah, there's a fun fact for you guys. You learn something new every day on this show, right?
I guess so.
All right. Carrying on, Diane, please give us some news.
All right. We have a lot of news for you guys. First up, the Taylor by Taylor Swift fragrance released a new super fun promotional video, and it's called Hi from Taylor. To participate in this video, you have to link it to your Facebook profile, but don't worry, it's completely worth it and just really awesome. So I would suggest going over to hifromtaylor.com to see what it's all about. I'm not going to give you any spoilers.
It's so cool.
It is cool, and I hate linking things to my Facebook account, but you guys convinced me, and yes, it is well worth it, so do it.
Well, if you can't trust Taylor, who can you trust?
Oh, it's not Taylor, it's Facebook.
Taylor had to sign off on it. She participated. All right, it's got her name on it.
She was there. Yeah. All right. In other fun news, Taylor's opening act, Ed Sheeran, entered an ice cream eating contest at Mel's Downtown Greenery in Connecticut last weekend. This contest was called the Big Kahuna Challenge, which asked participants to eat a sundae with 8 scoops of ice cream, a brownie, a banana, 7 more toppings, and whipped cream. Someone who was there said that Ed was having a really hard time with the big kahuna, and he was coughing and drooling while Taylor egged him on, laughing and playing the song Eye of the Tiger.
Nice.
It sounds like a good time. If you would like to see pictures and watch a video of Ed Sheeran stuffing his face with ice cream, you can follow the link in our episode guide.
That is so funny. That's funny. I want to take him on. I think I could take him.
Sounds like a lot of ice cream.
8 scoops is nothing. Really?
Yeah, it's probably like 3,000 calories.
Oh, that's more than 3,000 calories, I can guarantee
you. Oh, maybe. But I heard after Ed ate the whole thing, he had to go to the bathroom to, I guess, get rid of it.
To cleanse?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, so I don't know if you'll be keeping those 3,000 plus calories if you
Where'd you hear that? Is that actual fact, or is that just somebody spitting stuff out of their mouth? No pun intended.
I think I read it in the article.
Oh, okay. Might be valid then.
I mean, I would throw up after I ate that much ice cream. Shoot.
No, you would cleanse, Diane. We don't throw up on Taylor Talk. We cleanse.
Okay, thank you for teaching me the proper way to to phrase that. In other news, Rolling Stone featured Taylor Swift in an interview entitled Backstage with Taylor Swift. The interview was conducted after Taylor's show at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey and covers everything from show openers, what she eats before she performs, and what goes through her mind on stage.
Diane?
Yeah?
What does she eat before she performs?
Well, I do know she eats a really big breakfast and she eats a big lunch because she has to go into hair and makeup at about 4:30 to prep for the show. So that means she doesn't eat anything from like 4:30 to maybe like midnight.
Wow.
So she has to prepare, yeah.
Plus breakfast is the most important meal of the day anyhow, so that's good.
Thank you, Dr. Steve. Steve's our local nutritionist here on the show.
I guess so.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, though, Diane, I interrupted you with that question.
Oh, it's okay. It was a good question. So she told Rolling Stones some of the things that goes through her mind while she's on stage. She said, "Sometimes I get really caught up in reading the signs, and if I get too caught up, I will start to read the signs when I'm singing. So I'll have to make sure I'm only reading the signs in musical breaks. There will be people who just make a giant, huge picture of my cat's face, so big that it's all I can see, and that usually gets my attention. My cat out there, giant photocopy of her, 8 foot by 8 foot.
Steve, was that you?
I don't know if that's in reference to me or not. I definitely didn't make it 8 foot by 8 foot. It was about probably 2.5 feet by like 2 feet. So
Could have been.
Could have been. You never know. But there has been some pretty fancy, cool, big, huge signs out there that people have done. It's been pretty good at the shows.
And then finally, Rolling Stone further honored Taylor Swift in a list of the 50 greatest live acts right now. They described Taylor as a kitty feminist heroine who knows just the right dose of hooks, glitter, and stories about her famous exes to whip arena crowds into a teary frenzy, making every fan in the house feel like they have a very tall, very talented BFF who just wants to hang for a few hours and gab about boys and stuff. Although they only ranked Taylor at number 49, it's an honor for her to be named among some of the most legendary artists like Bruce Springsteen, Prince, and the Rolling Stones.
You know, I've got a bone to pick with that list.
What's that?
Because Taylor's only 49, and there are artists higher than her that shouldn't be.
Like who?
Oh, like Kanye West, somewhere around like number 20.
Oh, that's awkward.
You know, there's a few others, but the one reason that it bothers me is because, you know how we were talking, what, I don't remember, a couple episodes ago about voting things being rigged?
Yeah.
Okay, yep.
Well, this was voted by people in the industry, some of Rolling Stone staff members, and otherwise. And at the end of the article, they actually list who specifically voted. And actually, one of the people voting was Patrick Stump, who joined Taylor on stage. So I hope he voted for Taylor, at least. But other than that, there were certain artists. I can't remember who offhand. I'll have to go back and look at some point. But there were people who are on the list higher up than Taylor that were also voters on who made this list.
So they voted for themselves, you're saying?
I mean, wouldn't you?
Well, that's a good point.
So I just, you know, I kind of question the validity of that. I mean, I saw other artists on there I don't think are better on stage than Taylor. Taylor's really far on the list. And, you know, like I said, people voting for it are on the list. So, you know, that's unfair. Why wasn't Taylor given a vote on who makes this list?
I don't know. I mean, it is just a list and it's an opinion. So, I mean, I guess shouldn't really take it seriously, but it is cool that she was mentioned, I think.
I suppose. Right?
Yeah.
Think positive, Adam.
I'm just a giant skeptic of everything now after our discussion. I don't trust anything.
I mean, the list is all over the place. I looked at it there, and it's, you know, there's rock bands, there's, you know, rap, there's a little bit of everything, you know, old school, new school, everything else in between.
Right.
I mean, what, Madonna's ranked number 30, and I mean, she's pretty darn iconic to be that far down the list.
She should be higher up, I think.
I mean, I guess it depends on what the live shows are really like, because, you know, just because you do have hits, you know, that you've put out in radio and music videos and everything else like that, maybe your live shows aren't as good. I don't know. But I know Taylor definitely puts on a very good show.
Definitely, definitely. Cool. So for the full list, you guys can see if you agree or disagree with Steve and I and Diane. Go to taylortalk.org. We'll have the link to it in our episode guide for episode 74. Steve, what's been, what's coming up on the calendar?
Well, Adam, this is the last week that you can vote for Taylor for the Teen Choice Awards. You can go to teenchoiceawards.com. You have to be between the ages of 13 and 19 to vote. And the Teen Choice Awards will be aired on Fox at 8 p.m., 7 Central, on Sunday, August 11th. Also, on August 12th, we got some more Taylor goodness here because the CMA Music Festival, Country Night to Rock, which is hosted by Little Big Town. This is actually what happened for CMA Fest this summer, for those of you who got to see that, you know, live. They put it together and they put a show out there. That will be August 12th at 8 p.m. on ABC. Also, back to the voting, MTV VMAs, you can still vote for Taylor. She is up for I Knew You Were Trouble for Female Video of the Year and Video of the Year. You can go to vma.mtv.com to vote. And the VMAs will air on August 25th at 9 p.m. on MTV. So we got a lot of Taylor stuff on TV here in the next couple weeks. So lots of fun.
You know, Steve, because it's a constant debate over what Taylor's tweet was about with the VMA voting.
Okay.
I want to rehash it again because I think in light of something new that I discovered that we should have looked into before, I think that tweet was, in fact, about VMAs, not about her tooth-chipping incident.
Wait, which tweet are we talking about? What does the tweet say?
It's, Steve, do you remember exactly how it was worded? It was something about her wanting you to vote for the VMAs, and she promises to hold on to the mic tighter this time.
That's about what it said, yeah.
Something to that effect. It occurred to me that you remember when Kanye, or sorry, we don't mention the K name.
Yes. So are you going to cut that out of the audio? Please do.
Are you going to bleep him?
Yes.
Yeah,
you gotta bleep it
out. I got to bleep the K name. So when the K name stole the mic from Taylor, it was when she won Female Video of the Year for 2009 VMAs, right?
Right.
She has not won a VMA since that specific award, and this year she is up for Female Video of the Year again, the exact same award. So I think that tweet was about, if I win that, I'm going to hold on to the mic tighter this time. I don't think it was about when she chipped herself chipped her tooth in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that does make sense.
So booyah, Steve, mister.
Hey, whatever. I thought one thing and you thought another, and, you know, hey, maybe I do agree with you.
Thank you.
You just got to try to drive a point. It's crazy. Bringing up stuff from past episodes.
Well, I want to prove Steve wrong and me right.
I guess. Well, congratulations.
Oh my gosh,
you've
the
been
boys
successful
on the show.
Ugh. Dan, there's this thing called male ego.
Yeah, I think this is a perfect example of male ego.
just one male that ego. That's all. Just Adam's ego.
No. All right.
A little bit. It's all good.
All right, Mr. Adam Ego, do you want to give us the tour updates?
Of course, of course. On August 1st, Taylor was in Des Moines, Iowa, and the secret song was Ours. Then she had back-to-back shows in Kansas City, Missouri on August 2nd and August 3rd. The secret songs were Stay, Stay, Stay acoustic and Our Song on the 3rd. The 3rd, something extra special actually happened. Taylor's
special?
Best friend, special.
Oh, yeah.
Something special happened on the Kansas City show on the 3rd. Taylor's very best friend, Abby Anderson, was in attendance. And it was actually really funny because I don't know if it was just for laughs, but Grant tweeted in the middle of the concert, mid-read tweet, KC, I can already tell you that tonight's show is extra awesome because at Abby Ander is here. There ain't no protesting about that. Of course, in reference to the Westboro protesters, which we won't talk about because they are attention-mongering, vicious people.
Yes, moving on, Adam.
Carrying along. So Abby was in attendance. That was super cool. I wonder if Abby has to buy a ticket like the rest of us.
I think Taylor just gives her one.
I would say. That's what friends are for.
Yeah, like that would be kind of rude. Like, hey, you should come see me. It's going to be $80.
More than that.
Yeah, who knows?
Anyway, the Red Tour continues this week in Wichita, Kansas on August 6th, Tulsa, Oklahoma on August 7th, and Chicago, Illinois on August 10th. So if you're going to any of those shows, have an absolute blast. Tell us about it. We'd love to hear it. I'm sure you're going to have fun. And that's that for the tour updates this week. Moving along, we came up with a new mini segment last Woo-hoo! Night.
Ooh, what's this about?
Diane, I think you know you were part of the planning process.
I know. I'm just trying to egg you on so you answer my question for the listeners who don't know.
Okay. Well, the new segment is going to be called Tell Me Why. Taylor does that better than I do, sorry.
Yeah, a lot better.
Shut up. Anyway, Tell Me Why is just going to be like an open discussion where anybody can submit a question and we'll just throw it out there for an open discussion. That's what we're going to do. We're just going to talk about it. So we have an Ask FM account that's relatively new, ask.fm/TaylorTalk13, where we've already gotten like hundreds of questions submitted. So we're pretty well stocked on these questions, but keep some new ones coming just in case because, well, new questions are always good. Yeah. So first question we chose for this week, someone asked, what do you think is the most important way to support Taylor? So, open discussion, guys. What do you think?
I would say the obvious, which is buy her songs and not get them online for free when you're not supposed to.
That's a good choice. I'd have to agree with that. Also, voting for Taylor and just, you know, anytime that you can get some new people to be fans of Taylor, that's always good, too.
Well, see, I think in my mind, like, the most important way to support Taylor is to always appreciate her for what she is, who she does, appreciate her for her music, and not judging her by the way, like, media depicts her.
Yeah. And buy her merchandise.
Yeah, because appreciating Taylor is really what it comes down to. That is the most important way to support her, in my opinion, is to appreciate her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one for sure.
So, I mean, that's even more so than buying her music and things like that because, I mean, you can only buy her music how many times, you know, get the CD.
Yeah, but there's so many different ways. You can buy the digital, you can buy the CD, you can buy special editions, you can buy the vinyl.
You can. However, at this point, I feel like, you know, Taylor's not in it for the money and the sales. She's in it for the support and to share her music with the world. That's why I think appreciating her for her music and for her who she is more important than even buying her music.
Yeah, but you can't put on a show to that degree without having big-time money coming in, both through merchandising and through ticket sales.
Well, of course. I'm just saying that's not her main focus. I don't think she's trying to get rich.
No,
she already did
that. That's true.
Check that off the bucket list.
Yep. Got rich. Check.
Make enough money by my 23rd birthday to retire. Check.
I think she did that by like 18. Yes.
That's not relevant right now. We're talking about how to support her.
I know.
Shoot, she should be supporting us. I'm just kidding. But that's how I think. I mean, you know, this segment's not meant to be a very long discussion because we do have our main discussion coming up. But do you guys have any last thoughts on that, supporting Taylor?
Just keep voting, keep buying merchandise, and don't read into what the tabloids and other people are telling you. Make your own decisions and know that Taylor's doing the best she can.
Well stated, Steve. Well stated. Thumbs up.
Yay.
So if anybody has opinions on what they think is the most important way to support Taylor, of course, send them in to us and we'll try and share some next week. All right, cool. Moving on to our main discussion. Song analysis is back.
Yay!
With
dun, dun, dun.
a request from a listener named Maya, who emailed us, and don't judge us by this, but she emailed us on December 1st, 2012.
Yeah, so it's almost a year ago now.
Well, not almost a year, yeah, only at 8 months.
6 months, yeah, 6, 8 months.
Okay, well, it just feels like it was a long time
but
ago.
But that just so shows that we still hang on to this information, and we use it when we have a chance to, you know, make it relevant and everything else like that. It's not like people send us stuff and it disappears off the face of the earth.
Right. So remind me, guys, after we've done recording, to email Maya and tell her we're finally fulfilling her request.
Yay.
After 8 months. Anyway, in case you're wondering what she requested Sad, Beautiful, Tragic. She seems to think that, you know, it was pretty highly anticipated going into it, yet a lot of people didn't like it. So I put out a mini survey on Twitter, and we got a ton of replies. And everyone seems to love it, even though it's not their favorite for a lot of people. So why don't we start with that? Like, do you guys love it or hate it? Or somewhere in between?
I'm kind of somewhere in between. I mean, I don't like the sad Taylor song, especially like the slow, sad ones. And Sad, Beautiful, Tragic is definitely sad. But it's okay. Like, it's not the greatest song on the album. And obviously it's not the best even for using on the tour and that kind of stuff, but
oh, not at all, no. But it's not a
you know, it could almost be a decent acoustic song, you know, during her, you know, special wild card song, but at the same time it's just kind of okay to me. I mean, there's a lot more songs. It kind of is repetitive. Like, I don't know if it really totally tells a story all that much, other than pretty much kind of saying, like, you know, it's kind of like, it's almost like the story of us, where it's like, hey, it's tragic, you know, what happened to us, but that's pretty much all it does, is just repeat that it's tragic. It doesn't really give any details of what happened or anything else like that.
It's interesting you said that, Steve, because one of the replies we did get from @LordReblick on Twitter said, I don't listen to it. Or that he said he likes it, but he doesn't listen to it often because it can be slow and repetitive.
Yeah.
So I think you're right about that. Definitely slow and repetitive. Diane, what are your thoughts?
I have an interesting relationship with this song, because when I first heard it, I was like, okay, this is like really slow and obviously really sad. And it's almost one of those songs where if you just hear it once, you don't really get it and you might miss the point of it, you know, because it's so sad and so slow and almost like quiet. So it's a song that I've definitely like grown to like, but at first, yeah, I was like, all right, this is okay, but whatever, you know, like it didn't really grab me like some of the other Taylor songs have.
And a lot of the slower ones are like that, where like, I know even on the last album, you know, the Speak Now album, there was a lot of songs, like the slower songs at first I didn't like, and then it was either when I saw them live or just listened to them later on that I'm like, oh, actually kind of do like this song a lot more than mm-hmm. I thought I did.
See, that's happened to me as well, Steve. However, with this one, it hasn't happened. It hasn't grown on me. And I don't know why.
Do you listen to it often, though?
I think it's because you don't listen to it.
I don't. I probably haven't even listened to it since the album came out last year.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's
your
problem.
Aside from listening to it to prep for this episode, you know? Mm-hmm. But I still find it just kind of slow. I mean, I just don't like slow songs. I don't find it nearly as boring as the last time.
Well, really, the one for me, the last album was Dear John. That was the one, the first time I listened to that album, I did not like that song. And it really wasn't till I saw it on the tour and just everything about it. And I was like, I went from like going, I don't like this song, to I really like this song. That was kind of the interesting
See,
thing.
See, though, Steve, that's because on the tour, the performance was phenomenal of Dear John, with pyrotechnics and just everything. It was fantastic.
But even when I listened to the song after that, like on my iPhone or whatever, I enjoyed it more than I did kind of pre-tour when I originally first started listening to it.
However, Dear John is slightly more upbeat than Sad, Beautiful, Tragic. Sad, Beautiful, Tragic just sort of drags on and is very slow. I mean, it sounds like you should listen to it at a funeral.
Wow. I don't know if I'd go that
Well,
far,
I mean, it is like that.
I should clarify. I'm not specifically talking about the theme of the song, but more so the tone, just the way it's slow and you know, just sort of mellow.
You know what I mean? Adam, I think that was kind of the point, because, I mean, this song is about the death of a relationship, so I guess it kind of fits that it sounds like a funeral song.
Yeah.
Because it's...
the end of a relationship?
Yeah, it's... yeah. It's a death in a way.
Yeah, sad, beautiful, tragic love affair. Which was the other thing that kind of was weird for me. Like, the lyric, like, the name of the song, like, I understand that a lot of times you don't want to put the whole, like, crazy long name. You kind of pick, like, two or three words. But that was one thing I always thought was odd when I originally looked at the name of the song. I'm like, it doesn't really sound like that's a full, like, you know, sad, beautiful, tragic. I'm like, what, though?
Sad, beautiful, tragic, what, yeah.
And then once you listen to the song, obviously, you know, the rest of it is love affair.
Right.
So.
Yeah, for me, I don't really like, that's the only part of the song that I don't like is the whole, like, sad, beautiful, tragic thing. Because I just feel like there's so many other words that she could have used that would have meant more. Because I think the words sad, beautiful, and tragic get, like, almost, like overused, so that they become like they don't mean as much. You're just like, okay, sad can apply to anything, and it just doesn't, I guess, define for me what she was trying to define. Like, it's just kind of like, all right, that's like a not very, I guess, creative way to describe the song.
However, though, if we dive into the song itself, I think the theme is pretty clear. Like, to me, I mean, we might as well jump into this, what the song is getting into, what mm-hmm. it's about, is to me, I see it as being, I guess, the precursor to We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together. It's sort of like that part of the relationship where it's, like, over, but it seems like the guy is trying to get back with her. Like, there's the lyrics, you know, words, how little they mean when you're a little too late. It's like he's trying to... remember the part in We Are Never Getting Back Together when he's like, he calls me up and is like, I still love you. I think that part goes directly with that specific line about words, how little they mean when you're a little too late. She's basically saying, that's meaningless now.
Hmm.
It's over.
Yeah, except I think the tone of the song is obviously very different than We're Never Ever Getting Back Together.
It is, which is strange, isn't it? That they happen to be about very similar things.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, am I off base on that? That these two songs are related?
No, I definitely think they are, and I think they're about the same guy. It's just a different stage in her mind of how she dealt with these heartbreaking emotions. So, right. Yeah, this is more, like, sad and quiet and subtle, and then We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together is almost, like, annoyed. Like, no, guy, like, you're out of my life. Stop it. It's different.
That's why I say it. Sad, quiet. Sorry, Steve?
I was just going to say, sad, quiet, and subtle. Is that what Diane would have called the song?
Yeah, sad, quiet, and subtle.
Sad, quiet, and subtle.
Yeah, it might actually work.
I mean, that's what the song is. It's sad, quiet, and subtle.
Diane's rewriting Taylor Swift's lyrics over here.
It's the secret verse that she only does live. Maybe something like that, you know?
I never knew this song could be funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. All right, so in this song, she mentions a train a couple times. And, like, how do you guys think that works in this song? Like, what does the train mean? Does it mean anything? Why is there a train here?
Okay.
Do you have any opinions?
I've got plenty of theory on that. And there's multiple different things. Because... you know, Taylor, we've talked about on several occasions being the queen of metaphor. However, in this particular case, I think she uses the train both metaphorically and literally in different parts. Because I think one of the things you're probably referring to, Diane, is the secret message, right?
Yeah, that's part of it too.
That's out of the song, but that is while you were on a train. And I think we can use that to identify with Jake Gyllenhaal, who during their relationship was filming The Source Code, which is about he's playing an agent who has to prevent a bomber from blowing up a train, and the whole movie takes place on a train.
Oh, you know what's interesting about that? Okay, I have not seen that movie, but doesn't something happen where he can, like, time travel. Like, he goes back in time to keep trying to save something.
Yeah,
over
he
and
keeps
over again,
trying to prevent it from happening. It
which
is something
I
like that.
Guess could be metaphorical for the relationship, that Jake is trying to save the relationship over and over again, and it doesn't work.
Well, Diane,
like, he was trying to save the
thing. I think you're going too far off.
I like that theory.
That's a good theory, nonetheless. I mean,
yeah, but here's the thing, though, is Jake Gyllenhaal did not write the script for the movie.
I know, but I mean, if she watched the movie and heard about it, I mean, she's very, like, Englishy. She's into poetry. Like, I'm sure she was into that, if she even thought of it.
Yeah, but your theory is saying that that's coming from Gyllenhaal's end, because he kept trying to go back and rekindle the relationship.
Well, isn't that what he did? He called her and was like, I still love you, and, like, isn't...
He calls me up and is like, I still love you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. The thing is, Diane, is like I said, he didn't write the script for that movie. So, I mean, going from that perspective, it doesn't work. Yeah, Taylor could pick up on things like that, but Gyllenhaal would not have, because he had nothing.
Oh, no. I'm not saying that he was the one that wrote the script or whatever. I'm just saying that when she wrote the song, she might have applied that plot in some way as analogous to her relationship with him.
I mean, it's possible. It's possible. I don't see that, though.
Okay.
Where I see the train being metaphorical versus literal. Literal in the secret message, metaphorical in the song itself. There's a line in there, you know, that says, silence, this train runs off its track. And I think that's likely referring to the relationship becoming a train wreck.
Yeah.
So I think that's where the metaphorical use of the train comes into play.
Makes sense.
It's just so cool. I'm just, like, really happy right now, because I don't know, like the thing that is so interesting about this is because when I first heard this song, it's like, oh, this is boring, blah blah blah, but we just had a great convo about a train. Like, the song can't be that boring, right?
Well, that's the thing, though, Diana, is, in my opinion, what makes the song boring is the slow, repetitive nature. It has nothing to do with the lyrics. The lyrics, as always, are very in-depth and very metaphorical, very beautiful, mm-hmm. very meaningful. They're Taylor lyrics.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we can have a great discussion about it and have the song still be boring.
Okay.
That's just my point of view.
which is always the right point of view, so it's all good.
Thank you, Steve. I'm glad you finally realized that.
But maybe the repetitiveness of the song is, you know, the train just chugging down the tracks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that sort of chugga 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 choo choo. Here's a fun fact for you, since we were talking about backup vocals earlier. Do you guys know who does the backup vocals for Taylor in the chorus of this song?
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift. She does her own backup vocals on this song.
Whoa.
Talented girl.
Yeah. I just thought that was a cool fun fact to throw in. I don't know, just in case you didn't know. Did you know that, Steve?
I did not know that. No, that's another good stump the host, but Diane got that one, so good.
Well,
Diane cheated. I told her before we recorded.
Yeah, I cheated. But I think that makes sense, because didn't Taylor only record this song once? And that was the version that they used?
Yes, that was actually something really interesting. A story of how the song was written was she composed it initially on her tour bus, just with, you know, writing and doing her thing, doing her Taylor thing. When she got home, asked Nathan Chapman, the producer, to record, and they did that the same day. And, well, they put together a demo that same day, that is. And they decided with the final version that her voice was so pure in that demo, they actually used her original vocals. So, I mean, yes and no, Diane. She may have recorded it multiple times. I'm sure she recorded it multiple times. And then they just used the original.
Oh, okay.
And then, of course, she sang the backup vocals later. She can't, you know, she can't sing her own backup vocals at the same time she's recording the main part.
Come on, Taylor's talented. If anybody could do it, she could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, you never know, the way Ed Sheeran does it with his loop pedal. Taylor actually do that in real time, potentially. Maybe.
Interesting.
Probably not.
No. For an actual studio version, probably not, because it has to be perfect to go on the album. So, before we wrap up our discussion on Sad, Beautiful, Tragic. Do you guys have any favorite lyrics in the song? Because like we discussed, the lyrics are very in-depth, very beautiful, very Taylor-esque. So I was just wondering if you had any favorites.
I have a favorite section. I don't know if I have lyrics, but like
counts
for me, the whole bridge is perfect.
What part is that for us musically uninclined people?
Actually, you know what? Just the last part of the bridge where she goes, hang up, give up for the life we can't get back.
Like, oh, I was going to pick that.
Oh, that was your line? Sorry. Oh,
that's a good choice.
I love that because it's so brief, but you get such a big, like, scene in your head of it. Like, you imagine, like, okay, she's on the phone with this guy, and, like, they have a fight or something, and they end their relationship. And, like, it's very brief, but each phrase is like a punch. It's like, hang up, give up. Like,
it's like the 1-2 punch and then the knockout.
Yeah, it's, like, so emotionally charged, and really she's saying, like, 4 words. It's crazy.
Well, the other 4 words that I kind of like is distance, timing, breakdown, fighting. That's another good one there.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of shows how their relationship's falling apart. It kind of goes with that other one, the we both wake up in lonely beds in different cities. So kind of the whole thing is about being like a long distance relationship where, you know, obviously he's making the movie and she's busy with her own life and they don't have time to spend together. And when they do, they just seem to argue and fight.
Yeah.
That's a valid point. And sorry to switch gears back, but like going back to the other line, Diane, that you chose, mm-hmm. I only want to go back to that because I actually picked that out for a different reason. And I picked that out on the spot. I lied. It wasn't my line before you said it.
So then what was your line before you said it? We should talk about
I didn't
that
have one picked out, actually. I did it on the spot because the reason I went with that line, though, is because it reiterates my theory that this song is very strongly tied to We Are Never Getting Back Together, because hang up, give up for the life of us we can't get back. I mean, that's actually very close. We can't get back. We are never ever getting back together. I'm curious to know what the progression was, which song was written first.
That's a good question.
Out of the two, because they are so closely interrelated for being so different in nature. Mm-hmm. The lyrics relate them so closely. I'm like so intrigued by this right now. I can't get off that subject.
I would imagine that this song was written first because I don't see how you can get from this depth of sorrow to we are never ever getting back together for not caring and then going back and forth. Like, I feel like this would have to come first. Like,
yeah, you have the heartbreak.
Yeah,
and
you have
after
the heartbreak
that, you kind of have the recovery, and then you're like, heck with you. I can live my life without you. There's other fish in the sea kind of thing.
Well, chronologically in the story of Taylor Swift's life, this one definitely came first, and I can definitely see as well both of your points on why it would have been written first.
At least chronologically, but, you know, it's hard to say if it came to her later and said, hey, you know what, this is kind of what happened in the relationship that I had. So.
And that's the counter argument I was going to give is we don't know where or at what point Taylor's inspiration came to her for each respective song. Because right. All of them were written after the relationship anyway.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know exactly when the inspiration came to her. But chronologically, it makes sense that this came first. And in theme and emotion, it also makes sense this came first. Because you're sad before you have that empowering feeling at the end. Like, I'm over it.
Yeah.
One thing I don't understand is then why is this song not before We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together on the album? Because wouldn't that make more sense?
I don't think she put the songs in any particular order that way. I think, I don't know, they might be random, or she might have felt like, okay, we want like a beat song and then we want something sadder and then a beat song. You know how she alternates?
Well, yeah, like, I think that's obviously part of it. And also, yeah. It always seems like the strongest songs are like at the beginning of the album, and then there's a little bit that's just kind of okay, and then like right in the middle of the album is always a real strong part too. So,
yeah, I think We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together is track 8, right?
Track 8.
Yeah.
See, though, it's hard to say because I feel like everything she does is going to be strategic, and I think a lot of thought went into the order of the album. I can't believe it was random.
No, I don't think it was random, but I don't think she put it in order of, like, this is when I met him. This is when we were having problems. This is when we broke up. Like, I don't think it went like that.
But since we're on that topic, Sad, Beautiful, Tragic comes between Holy Ground and the Lucky One.
Yeah.
Why?
Because Holy Ground is upbeat. The song is sad, quiet, and subtle. Mm-hmm. And then the Lucky One is more upbeat.
You think that's all there is to it?
I think that's all there is to it, yeah.
That's probably a big part of it. It really is.
Those three songs are not interrelated at all, are they?
I don't think so, no.
No, they're about different things.
All right, so I think that just about wraps it up for our Sad, Beautiful, Tragic discussion. As always, if you guys want to contribute, you know, give us feedback on it, please feel free to do so. You know there's a bunch of ways to contact us. We'll list them off at the end of the episode. But for now, we got some mini segments. Mini segments are always fun. We love mini segments. Yes.
Half near voice there, Adam.
What did you say? Sorry.
It got progressively higher.
Yeah, it got kind of like it was funny at first, and then it got kind of creepy.
Oh, I
mini
can,
segments. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I can make it creepier, Steve.
No. Why don't you say the mini segments?
All right. Feeling lucky today on Taylor Connect gave us actually three of them. You know you're Swifty when you don't call your Taylor Swift posters, you call them wallpaper. That would take a lot of posters to do that. You celebrate Last Kiss Day on July 9th, and you try to buy all Taylor-inspired school supplies, red things, Taylor Swift notebooks, etc. It's a good thing Taylor Swift does actually make Taylor Swift notebooks.
Right. That is one thing that's disappointing, though. You go into, like, most stores, and it's like you can find, like, a billion One Direction things and such, but you cannot find a lot of Taylor stuff, just kind of what Walgreens has had. But, hey.
Yeah, but Taylor's merch has always sort of been a little unique in certain respects, though, Steve, because, you know, a few of them now have fragrances. Bieber has a fragrance, but Taylor actually really has a fragrance, you know, a fragrance line that is very her, that she actually contributes to rather than simply endorsing and getting paid for it. And like the Keds shoe line, like I can't think of another pop artist or country artist, I don't know what you want to call Taylor, that has her own line of shoes.
And actually wears them.
Usually that's for basketball stars to have their own shoes. That's about it.
Yeah, and only
doesn't Justin Bieber have his own shoes? Did I make that up? I know he has his own headphones. I know he did that.
I'm pretty sure you made up the shoes. He has his own shoes he likes. They're those high tops. I forget what the brand is called, but
okay.
That's not actually him endorsing it. That just happens to be his favorite shoe.
Okay.
I think.
Well, we are not experts on Justin Bieber, so we can be wrong.
That's true.
All right, our next submission comes in from Twitter from TayTay13Swift13. And they say, you know you're a Swiftie when someone says, sometimes I pray that you stop talking about Tay-Tay. And that's a true story.
That's silly.
That's funny, though.
This one comes from Anonymous via text message. And they say, you know you're a Swiftie when you daydream about going to Disney and meeting Cinderella, and it would be Taylor, or being at Disney the same time as she and the agency are there. I still can't decide.
I can't decide. Do I want Taylor to be Cinderella or not?
I think her not being Cinderella is more realistic, but I can see why that could be fun.
Because she is kind of like a princess, right? You know,
the princess in red, yeah.
Yes.
I stole that from our friend Augustine.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
That's true. He does do that. But that does actually remind me to remind everyone out there, if you're going to text us, remember to identify yourself, because as much as I would love to be friends with all of you, I don't have all your numbers saved in a contact list. So when it comes through as just a phone number, I don't know who you are. Neither does Steve nor Diane nor Maya.
So then you become anonymous.
Yeah, then you become an anonymous submission. So if you text us, I know it feels awkward because when you're texting your friends, you don't identify yourself, but please try and identify yourself so we know who you are. Next one is from the Swift Factor on Twitter, who says, you know you're Swiftie when a Taylor song plays as you're leaving the grocery store and you keep singing it as you walk through the parking lot, put groceries in the trunk, and get in the car. Now, what would make that story even cooler is if you turned on your car and Taylor was on the radio.
That would be mind-boggling at that point.
Just saying.
Okay, I actually got two. This is from Joel on Facebook. You know you're a Swiftie when you're known as the Taylor Swift guy by your friends, which Adam and I, we can both relate to that.
Yeah, I was going to say, who are you trying to compete with here, Joel? There's two of us here.
There's tons of Taylor Swift guys out there, but yeah, that's cool. And he also sent in, you know you're a Swiftie when you get a Fearless and the number 13 tattooed on your body.
I say picture, it didn't happen.
I've seen a lot of people that have Fearless tattoos and, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. I mean, I'm not a tattoo person. I don't happen to have any tattoos or plan on getting any, but if I did, it probably would be some sort of Taylor-related tattoo.
So, Steve, do you think if, you know, I got a giant 13, like, tattooed on my back, like, the entire size of my back, and
oh my
I
God.
Wore no shirt at the Taylor concert, would that get me into Club Red?
That I don't know. I mean,
okay, how about a giant 13 on my back, and then I get Taylor's name tattooed across my chest?
Oh my God. Please don't do that.
Yeah,
I just have an awful image in my head.
Right.
Because then what if you don't get Club Red, and then you're stuck with this ginormous tattoo?
At least Taylor would be a part of me forever.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, probably a smaller tattoo. If you're a tattoo sort of person, get something that's, you know, reasonable.
Maybe I should get a little 13 on my thumb.
That
way, anytime I give someone a thumbs up, it'll have a 13 there.
Wouldn't that hurt, though, a thumb tattoo? I don't know.
I think the problem with it is you wouldn't be able to use your thumb for a while.
Probably not. But it would probably just be standing up, giving a thumbs up all the time, though, so that would work.
Anyways, the next one comes from Swift Agency 13, and she says, you know you're a Swiftie when you can look at pictures from the Red Tour and know what line she's singing sometimes.
That's impressive, if you can read Taylor's lips in a photo.
I mean, sometimes I can figure out what song she's performing based on the outfit she's wearing, but actually to look and see what her lips are saying, I'm not that good at it.
She must just remember, like, the moment she took the picture, and then she knows what line she's singing.
Quite possible.
Yeah.
Perhaps, Diane. Stop being so logical.
Yeah, why do you keep reading into everything today?
It's a song analysis. This is what my brain is turned to right now. It's turned to, like, analytical stuff.
It's not supposed to be a mini-segment analysis, though.
I'm trying to support Hannah here.
All right.
It's all good.
The last one is a text message who did identify themselves. It's Ashley, who says, you know you're Swiftie when you have the Taylor Talk number as the 13th speed dial on your cell.
Ooh.
Boom. Yeah. Nice. Let me ask you this, though, Ashley. If you have our phone number as the 13th speed dial, why do you text us instead of calling?
Good question.
Are you shy?
I don't know.
So, Steve.
Yes, sir.
Diane.
Yeah.
What are Swifties listening to?
It's a good question.
Sydney texted us. What is with these text messages? We normally don't have, like, any text messages, and then our text thing is, like, flooded.
Good.
It's a good thing, though.
It is a good thing.
You're making it sound like it's a bad thing. We want lots of texts. Keep sending texts, regardless what Adam said.
No, of course send texts. I'm just saying I would like to see them more consistently, rather than, like, several months of no text messages and then, like, 20 of them.
Oh.
Anyway, Sydney suggested we listen to a song called Different by an artist whose name I have no idea how to pronounce.
Eczema?
I think, you know, it is a, I believe, a Latin American singer, Hispanic singer. So I think it's like Ximena Sariñana.
It's spelled Ximena.
Yes. And the last name, Sariñana. So if you're interested, it is a fun and upbeat song. Go check it out. Thank you to Sydney for suggesting it. Sydney, I did actually text you back asking for the pronunciation of that name. If you could get back to me, that'd be great.
Oh, that's funny.
So there's another incentive for you guys to text us mini segment submissions. I'll text you back. It'll be fun. We'll have a texting game. Last thing before we go, we got a What Would Taylor Do voicemail from Brenna. So let's hear from Brenna.
Hi. What would Taylor do if Adam were chosen to do the male character in the music video Love Story?
Well,
Adam, did you pay someone to call that in for you?
I did not. I did not.
I don't know about that.
I don't believe you.
I did not. But my answer to that question is I think Taylor would fall in love.
Well, of course. It's a love story.
Taylor would say yes. What do you guys think Taylor would do if I were cast as the male character? Although that's an old video now. Why would they be casting for it at this point? But hypothetical. Hypothetical. They're casting for Love Story right now, and I'm being cast for it. What do you guys think Taylor would do?
Find a
treat
new
you the same as
music video producer.
What did you say, Steve?
I said find a new music video producer.
Ouch. That hurts, Steve. That breaks my heart.
Oh, you'll survive. Your ego will crush the blow.
Speaking of my ego, on a side note, did you guys get any submissions for Adam Sylvain?
You know what? No one did tweet us about that. I was kind of disappointed.
I did, actually.
You got some?
I got a private DM from Swift Agency 13, a.k.a. Hannah. Hold on, let me find it.
Uh-oh.
Steve, you got my hopes up there for a second. I was about to think, good, not everybody thinks I'm as vain as you two do, but
no, it
Diane
happened.
Had to ruin that. Thanks a lot, Hannah.
Yeah.
I just, see, now Hannah talks to me so much that I can't find it.
All right, that's okay. I don't think I want to hear it anyway.
Yeah.
Plus, it's a DM. You're not supposed to share DMs. That's why you tweet people directly, right? DMs are supposed to stay private.
All right, well, back to Brenna's voicemail. Diane, what do you think Taylor would do?
Probably treat you the same as any other male character that was in her music video.
Steve, she's doing it again. She's being too logical.
Yes, stop being logical.
I'm being too logical.
Come up with something more creative. You're a writer. You're a storyteller. Like, give us something story-like.
Like at the end of the video that Adam
no,
and
I can't.
Taylor
My
ride
brain
off
is
on
only
a horse
thinking
into
logically.
The sunset.
Like, okay, Adam. When I was thinking about this question, I had two options to answer. One, that she would treat you the same as any other music video guy. Or two, she would make out with you, because that's what she does with the other guys she has in the music video.
Really?
If that's like scripted, she does it. But I didn't want to say that, because I think your ego is in danger of becoming too big right now. But
it's too big for this podcast.
It's too big for this podcast.
Well, blame Brenna, not me.
Yeah.
I'm not sure this Brenna person even exists.
She does, Steve. You just heard the voicemail.
I understand that, but you know, you're good at tweaking your voice. You know, I hear you sing real high sometimes. Maybe you could, I don't know. Just saying. No one ever submits stuff about me on this show.
You're me. What is that, Steve? Yeah. What are we?
You guys haven't been around long enough.
That's okay.
I've been around for a long time, and so has Maya.
Well, where's Maya now, huh?
Adam, you're so vain.
Yeah.
You I'm probably kidding. Think this podcast is about you.
No, Steve, you already made that joke on the...
Oh my god, I remember what the thing was. Okay.
Oh, jeez.
Swift Agency 13 said, Adam is so vain, he thinks his voice sounds sexy on Taylor Talk.
Ouch.
Wow.
Hannah, we are no longer friends.
The truth
hurts. You just
hurts.
Lost it.
The
you
truth
lost
hurts.
It. I'm done with you.
Oh.
It's okay, Hannah. I still love you.
Ow. I'm going to cry.
You'll get
Mom,
over it,
baby.
Adam.
All right, whatever. Anyway, yes. this episode seems like the episode that never ends right now. So we should probably wrap it up.
Okay.
But before we go, as always, I want to remind everyone to continue submitting for these mini segments. There is, as always, a variety of ways to contact us. You can email us, taylortalk@taylorswift13.org. You can tweet us, Facebook us, or Taylor Connect us to Taylor Talk 13. You can leave us a voicemail or text message to area code 240-31-SWIFT, or you can leave us a voicemail directly on the website, taylortalk.org. And of course, there's the newest way. You can contact us for our newest mini segment called Tell Me Why and ask a question on our Ask FM, which is ask.fm/taylortalk13. As always, in case you forgot, because sometimes I forget all of those, go to taylortalk.org and click the contact link, and they are all listed there for you. Hope you guys enjoyed episode 74 this week. We will see you next week. But for now, I am Adam.
I'm Diane.
And I'm Steve.
Have a great week, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
This podcast is not directly affiliated with Taylor Swift.